on this edition of The Self-Publishing Show.
You don't own your book page on Amazon's website. Your Facebook profile, even though it's got 10,000 followers on your group or page, you don't own that. That can change at any time. Your online platform, however, is something that you own as an author, and it's something that you get to build however you want.
Publishing is changing. No more gatekeepers. No more barriers. No one standing between you and your readers. Do you want to make a living from your writing? Join indie bestseller Mark Dawson and first-time author James Blatch as they shine a light on the secrets of self-publishing success. This is The Self-Publishing Show. There's never been a better time to be a writer.
Hello and welcome to The Self-Publishing Show with James Blatch.
And Mark Dawson.
Relaxed in his new studio, his new suite. Have you got a red light somewhere?
No, I don't. I'm not a prostitute, James. So, no, I don't. Can I borrow one of yours?
I turn my whole office red, try and keep the family out.
Does it work?
No, it doesn't.
No.
I mean, they're awful. They just come in, they cross the red light. They used to call it running a red light in the BBC, and it's a don't do thing. You don't run a red light unless the Queen's dead, then you can run the red light.
I saw, of course, what happened with your red light the other day when your son sunk a three-pointer from downtown. Was very excited, rushed in, and I could hear you. He was on Facebook with your Nest camera, and I could hear you going, he was like, yeah, I'm so excited. And James was like, great.
I was much more enthusiastic than
we may have mentioned that before, but it was quite a funny video. Parenting 101 by James Blatch. Crush your son's dreams.
Yeah, of course. You've got to keep them grounded, haven't you? Don't let them get ideas above the station. William, you're going to be average.
Yes, average. Apart from that one flash of genius.
He does at the moment, at least. He's 14 and he does still want to be an RAF pilot, which I'd obviously thoroughly approve of.
Yes.
But, I have been talking to him this week about time-distance equations and he's, I don't feel his commitment at the moment to the math side of it. Or running, keeping fit. But anyway, right. Okay, enough wiffle waffle. Let's talk something serious. Let's welcome our Patreon supporters. Catherine has pulled out all the stops and in 20 seconds told us that we have Siren School, which is a great name. I presume it's a school. It could actually be someone's name. And Rashin Hoskins from Oregon, USA. Thank you very much indeed for supporting us. They've been to patreon.com/self-publishing show. Where you can become a part of this organization. You get access to the Self-Publishing Formula University. Do you know what? As we come out of lockdown, well, I say we come out of lockdown. We are coming out of lockdown. Who knows whether there'll be a second wave? And quite a lot of the, as we speak at the moment, towards the end of June, quite a lot of the southern part of the United States is not looking great at the moment, corona-wise. So they could, I think we keep our Self-Publishing Formula University open and free. For now, at some point it will go back to being a part of your enrollment in a course or because you subscribe to us on Patreon. But at the moment, if you go to self-publishing formula /SPFU free, you can sign up to the university for free during this period of lockdown. Once you're in for life, by the way. So a good idea to get on board if you can. Regular live training. We've got some good ones coming up. We've got Pro Writing Aid. Going to be doing one and Freshman Their podcast interview. Also, I think we'll probably get Prestas on to do a webinar. And we've got Alex from Klytics, who's always good value. In fact, that's something we could potentially talk about, Mark, if you're ready to talk about it. I know you've been hatching a plan with him in the background. But I know before we get going to today's interview, which is really all about author platform building your platform as an author with Nick Thacker a little bit later, we do want to talk about BookBub. I'm going to stop talking now because I can see you looking at me thinking he's talked for 2 minutes again.
Yeah, I'm looking at the counter just because it's James talking for 2 minutes. No one tunes in for you, James. They're here to listen to me. So
I'm gonna granular detail on the ratings and find out my approval ratings.
Yes, yeah. So yeah, I had a BookBub on Saturday, so we record this on Monday, and went on Saturday on my the first box set in the Milton series, so books 1 to 3, down to 99 cents, and it went really well. BookBub still very effective. I haven't really noticed a huge difference in any of the time I've been using them, and that's probably my 35th or 40th even BookBub deal. I've been very lucky with how many I've been able to get. And still works, you know, really well. So also what I did this time was I've been advertising the box set quite heavily in Australia and the States for the last couple of weeks. And I thought I would run some ads, very time-sensitive, specific ads, referring to the fact that you could get the first three books in a multi-million copy selling series for 99 pence or 99 cents. And
get all three books for 99 or 99 each.
Yeah, it's a box set. So a box set with three books at 99 pence, 99 cents. So a really good deal. Obviously, I'm not making much in royalty on that. I'm only going to be making 30 pence when you get the 30% royalty. I thought I'd kind of just see how well they converted. And of course, I'm banking on read-through. So I think I probably spent, I don't know exactly what it was, about $600, I think, in addition to the BookBub fee on Facebook ads. For the period that it was at 99 pence, running out yesterday. And I've just done the figures today, and I got one of the ads, I don't remember the exact numbers, but the conversion metrics stood out. One of the ads converted at 35%, which is, I've never ever seen, well, I have, but not for a long time, that very, very high level of conversion. And it was, you know, I think it's a combination of time sensitivity, because there's a date on it, so this will end on Sunday the X of, you know, whatever it was, 27th, and the price was on it, and lots of social proof in the fact that I referenced the fact that it was a million copy selling series, multi-million copy, and it was very good. So those were converting very effectively. Now the return on investment, because it was a high ad spend and a low return just on the revenue coming in from the ad, directly from the ad, was something like 0.1, so ROAS, percentage of you know, of the sale that I was making was 0.1, which is dreadful. Obviously, those ads get switched off immediately because it's just terrible. But when read-through is factored in, so, you know, let's say I was, if I was converting it at 35%, you know, I was 35, if every 100 clicks, I was getting 35 new readers. And when you add in the read-through on that, so the box set read-through, even if you just imagine it was, say, $10, which is very conservative as to new readers coming into the books that I've got, those were converting in terms of lifetime read-through return on investment at about 600%. So, you know, it was really, so money in hand, dreadful. So, you know, a lot, you could say, well, you've lost almost all of that $600, maybe you made a $50 back. But what I'm banking on, and I'll keep an eye on it and see whether I can detect it through the box sets 2, 3, 4, and 5, and perhaps the individual books. That's what I'm looking at as to the kind of long tail effect of that spend. So experience would suggest that they'll do quite well.
Yeah. Well, that's good. And we saw somebody posting into the group, I think only this week, saying, oh, I've heard BookBub international deals aren't really worth it. I've been offered one. Can you give any advice? And obviously,
this wasn't
yours
international.
Yours was a US.
Worldwide.
Worldwide deal. Mm. But as we mentioned a couple of weeks ago, I had a international deal for the Fuse books that we market, and had 500 downloads in a day and a half. And I'm still feeling the benefit of that read through. Without question. In fact, I will. I'm doing a blog post, and you can see the BookBub spike and then the slow ramp up in the weeks that follow of page reads, which is fantastic. So definitely, as far as I'm concerned and you're concerned, BookBub is still the business.
Oh, yeah, there's no question. Yeah, it's the gold standard for that kind of promotion.
Yeah,
and I'm not just saying that because I know they're listening.
Yeah, they do listen, actually. If we mention BookBub, we often get a little note from them. We do love the BookBub peeps. They are a good team. I'm missing our trips this year, Mark. It's going to get to that point, isn't it? Particularly in the September when it's actually a bit grey here today. First day of Wimbledon, should have been in the UK. But we're missing having some time, some chinwagon drinks with people from around the world, including the BookBub crew. What do you suggest for somebody in our case with Fuse Books, let's do some of this marketing strategy live on the podcast. I've had the BookBub international deal a few weeks have gone by. That was the beginning of June 3rd. Should I now be looking at one or two of the other newsletter services and so on to try and do something for the next month?
Yeah, I mean, it won't hurt. I mean, you need to. A lot of them these days aren't as effective as they used to be. Some there are some that are still worth looking at, and I think there's a blog post on the Readsy site. And so hello to Ricardo because he listens as well. I'm pretty sure they've actually kind of broken them down into tiers, as in effectiveness tier one, tier two, tier three. BookBub is probably the only tier one, and then there are others that will be reasonably effective, but not you won't see anything like what you get from BookBub. But still sometimes worth doing.
Yeah, okay, I'll have a little look into that. And what about the countdown deal, which is a button I've never pressed on KDP? Tell me about that.
Yeah, that's just a different way of doing things. So you basically, the idea when they introduced it, and I don't think it's ever really taken off that way, was to have a tiered promotion. So it would be, say, 99 cents for one day. Then there'd be a counter that would say it's going up to $1.99, then $2.99, then $3.99. And you'd run that over a set period of days. But the main difference is that you'd get 70% rather than 30% when you dropped it below a dollar or a pound. Unfortunately, you can't tie them in with the BookBub deal because BookBub include Australia as one of their markets, and you can't do a countdown deal in Australia. You can only do it in the UK and the US. So you have to hit the 30% royalty, which is a pity because BookBub could, if they wanted to, give you the flexibility of not including Australia. I'm sorry, apologies to Australians listening. But if you didn't do that, you would be able to triple your royalty and get up, well, not quite triple, but more than double your royalty.
So can you not do the countdown deal and then manually change Australia in KDP?
No, because if you, the price would go down. I'd have to double check, but I'm 99% sure you can't. So when you set the price, it will, you can't then tweak it in other jurisdictions. I'd love to be proven wrong on that, but I'm almost certain that you can't. So it does make it a little bit more difficult to benefit in that way for a big promotion. But they're still, when I'm thinking about doing, I've been meaning to for a little while, kind of run time sensitive deals. So maybe I'll say the first book in the series, put that down to 99 pence, 99 cents, and then run a lot of Facebook ads in the US and the UK. With the sure knowledge that you're going to lose money. Actually not quite so sure. You would still lose money even if you were getting 70% on a dollar. You're not going to convert a fast enough rate to make that profitable. But what you're of course hoping for is that you get your $10 or your $15 read through value, and that makes the ads profitable over the long term. So that's on my list of things to do.
So would you, as your countdown deal strategy, would you run ads to your countdown deal?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, if you have a deal, so instead of $3.99, it's down to a dollar, that's worthy of running ads. As I said, I think I would be including time sensitivity in the ad.
Okay. So you're talking about Facebook ads where you can adjust the copy to that degree.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. You can't reference deals on any right. Amazon ads. And in fact, I think Amazon ads may be removing custom copy because I haven't been able to do that for a while. So even in accounts that I have where custom copy is possible, I was running ads the other day and it didn't give me the option. So I think that might be coming out. So we better call Janet.
Yes. Well, anyone familiar with Janet Margot's course and is Ads for Authors will know that she puts custom copy. In fact, if you came onto the webinar, you'll know that she puts the custom copy very low down in terms of what you should be thinking about and worrying about. She thinks she's not seen evidence that it makes any difference. Yes, and she also thinks there's a bit of a hangover. So it wouldn't surprise me if it's going to go. Good. Okay, well, that's interesting. It gives me some stuff to do. I like to think of it in months. I do like a nice clean spreadsheet with a month. And we've built up our page reads per day to knocking on 50,000 now, which is amazing from where we started, 11 or 12,000 a day. But I'd like to do something at the beginning of July to try and get a boost going through July. So I'll maybe look at a countdown deal and some strategy around that. Do a bit of tinkering in the old Facebook ads platform. Love a bit of that. Good. Okay, right. Let's move on to our interview, which is Nick Thacker, who's been on many yonks ago, I think. We bump into Nick when we travel in those bygone years. And Nick is somebody who does take a holistic view at authors. He's somebody who's worked also on the tech side quite a bit. So the interview is really about building your platform, and not just when he says platform, I think the point of this interview is to try and think of your your real estate online as a platform, your presence on Amazon and Facebook and your website, not simply put a website up and think of that as a platform. So that's the purpose behind the interview. He's also somebody behind an email service which had a faltering start in the past. I think we do reference that in the interview, and that looks like it might be coming back as an email service specifically for authors. Let's hear from Nick Thacker.
This is the Self-Publishing Show. There's never been a better time to be a writer.
Nick Thacker, welcome to the Self-Publishing Show. So welcome back, because I think you've been on in the past, have you not?
You know, it's been such a long time. I'm not sure if I have. I'll have to go back and find some episodes.
Got a feeling you may have been on with John Logson some time ago. But anyway, we'll in the library somewhere. But you're back. You're in Colorado Springs. As we've just been chatting pre-interview, you're in the process of beginning to move as far west as you can get and still be in the US. And then that's still not true, is it? Because I think Alaska goes further west.
I think Alaska's a little farther west. I know this is the farthest south.
South. That's it. Yes. It's one of those pub quiz questions. Furthest north, south, west, and east states, and three of them are Alaska. Anyway,
that's right.
Okay, there you go. So you're going to move to Hawaii, which is very exciting. And so it seems like actually one of the great things about being in the industry that we're in, working from home, particularly as we're, of course, we can't go 5 minutes without mentioning the coronavirus. We're in the midst of that at the moment. Right. But here we are as people selling electronics in ones and zeros that travels across the internet. And you can do that from anywhere, right? You can do it from the beach. You can do it from the Hawaiian beach, which sounds gorgeous.
Well, we hope we get there. Again, as you mentioned, this virus that we can't stop talking about may change our plans a little bit. It's already messed with it a little bit, but that's the goal. We'll see if we can get down there. As you said, as long as I have an internet connection, even if not, I'll fly over once a month and upload the books and then, take the money out of the bank and then come back if I need to. But
yeah,
we want to get out. We want to just live that lifestyle.
I really hope we're not going to plunge back into the dark ages, then. So let's not wish that.
I really hope so. I am way too doughy for that. I'm not prepared to.
Yeah, I can't. I can rub sticks together, but no fire is going to happen for a long time. Okay. Well, look, let's get talking. I think it's a good chance to remind people about yourself. You are a writer of thriller novels. Is that you? A thriller writer, Nick?
Thriller, action adventure. Yep.
Action adventure thriller. Talk to us a little bit about your writing first.
My writing is very genre fiction, commercial fiction. I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel. I'm not trying to win a Nobel Peace Prize. I am trying to win a Nobel Peace Prize.
Yes,
not a prize.
That's good. Maybe a Pulitzer Prize then. You're not trying to win a Pulitzer Prize.
Not trying to win a Pulitzer Prize.
You don't have to make. You don't have to apologize for writing genre fiction on this podcast.
No. I understand. I'm trying to give people paint a picture of what it's like. Very same genre as Clive Cussler, Dan Brown. They're a little bit better than I am at it, but that's what I'm working on. I've got a series called the Harvey Bennett Thrillers, and it is a park ranger, sort of a reclusive individual, and it's sort of a deconstruction of a Jack Reacher character. You know, how did Jack Reacher become Jack Reacher? Sort of.
Okay.
Sells very well, and it's been my bread and butter series. But I've also got a series about a bartender assassin named Mason Dixon. Very tongue-in-cheek, edgy, sort of crime noir almost. Very different than Harvey Bennett. But those are the two big series that I've got, the two main ones. And then, of course, a lot of co-writing projects that I'm working on.
They sound great. Both series sound great. I love the bartending assassin. That's a TV series right there, right? Ted Danson.
Well, I'm just waiting for those option contracts to roll in. But, yeah. No bites yet.
We'll start our production studio when the virus is gone. Okay, and we got talking a little while back when you developed author.email, which was a mailing list. So I never know quite what to say, because you say internet service provider, mailing service provider, email service provider?
Email service provider, yep.
Email ESP. Service provider. So like the, MailerLite and MailChimp and ConvertKit, etc. And you started one that was specifically geared around authors. And I can remember some of the growing pains in those early days, and we had that as well, starting a new company and getting things up and going. So give us an update on where author.email is now.
Well, thanks for asking. As you remember, we did try to do a launch with you for Self-Publishing Formula. And we pulled out because we felt as though we weren't going to scale properly. And we didn't want to shoot ourselves or you in the foot by forcing a lot of people through a system that wasn't quite ready to handle it. It was very unfortunate and we hated that, but we kept working. And so over the past 4 or 5 years, my business partner and I, Kevin Tumlinson, have been building the system into what it is now, which is sort of a 2.0 that's also now in a open beta sort of thing. So there's a waiting list because, again, we want to make sure we can scale and maintain reputation, deliverability. building an email server is an absolute nightmare, but I highly do not recommend it. But we did, because we didn't want to pay $300 a month to MailChimp, ConvertKit, or, you know, whoever it is. And we wanted to be able to do some of the things that that we're not able to do on other platforms. So author.email is up and running. There's a waiting list, but we're onboarding now, handful or two of people a week, and trying to get them in the system. Obviously, there's still some user interface things that we're working on, but as far as the system and deliverability goes, so far it's been very, very cool. It's been working out really well.
And where are you looking at it? Where is it going to sit in terms of kind of MailChimp and ConvertKit and MailerLite at the moment? Is it in that mold?
It is. It's essentially, that's the idea, is if you have MailerLite, we're trying to do the same thing, but restrict it to authors. And that gives us a few benefits. Namely, you know, we aren't going to be as aggressive like MailChimp was against affiliate marketing links, because our authors are typically not in the internet marketing space. You know, they're not doing any harm by sending an affiliate link to their own book. So we don't care about that sort of thing. We're not forcing people to use, without getting too technical and in the weeds, you know, the idea is that we wanted a service that, instead of, you know, having a rack of computers over here that we're using and trying to tweak to build our delivery server and build a reputation with ISPs around the world, we decided to go the cloud route. So we've got delivery servers through Amazon's SES program, Elastic Email, PepiPost over in the, I think it's Ukraine. And the idea is that we're using their servers that have already been tested and run through the ringer with ISPs. So our deliverability is just what you'd expect with a MailerLite or ConvertKit or MailChimp. And it's, like I said, it's been really cool, because we can scale now on that side of it much quicker than we would be able to if we were just trying to build a server rack on our own. The benefit to the authors is that it's far cheaper. For example, our bottom package is $10.99 a month right now, and it's up to 10,000 subscribers. We don't limit you. You can send as many emails as you want. We don't have limitations for autoresponders. You can build as many lists as you want within that. We count each email one time. So,
okay.
So it's just an affordable version of a MailerLite or MailChimp.
Excellent. Well, good luck with that. We'll keep in touch and see how that rollout and growth goes. And I think we're going to talk about platform building today, Nick. And I know you have a particular, not a beef, that's the wrong word for it, but you have a particular idea that there's a difference between just assembling some of the nuts and bolts and having a viable platform, a foundation for your author career.
That's the perfect way to put it, James. It's exactly the difference. You know, I came from marketing before any of this writing stuff happened, and so for me it was almost intuitive. You know, I don't want to just build a website; I want to build an online platform. But to some people that doesn't make sense. The difference is subtle sometimes. But essentially, you know, you have a website built as an author, which is just disseminating some information, who you are as an author, and if you want more, you know, click here, go here. I like to take the approach that your online presence is your platform, meaning it's something that you're not just disseminating information, you're actually engaging your readership a little bit more than you would with just a website. For example, instead of just having a website that lists all of your books and people can click away to it, and you've got an online store that you're selling special editions, and we'll get into all this stuff later, but the idea behind an online platform is that you own it. It's sort of like your home base online, whereas with Amazon, you don't own that real estate. You don't own your book page on Amazon's website, your Facebook profile, even though it's got 10,000 followers on your group or page. You don't own that. That can change at any time. Your online platform, however, is something that you own as an author, and it's something that you get to build however you want.
Yeah. Part of your brand, your shop window in that sense.
It's exactly what it is. It's your brand. It's your a completely controllable universe, your empire, if you will.
Okay, so let's talk about what people should be aiming for then with a website stroke platform. What do you think are the differentiating features then that are going to make this a platform rather than simply a website?
Yeah, great question. There's a few subtle things, and they're pretty small. Most of it, though, James, comes down to the mindset. It comes down to the way you approach your author career. And so in the book, when I give this presentation, I'll be doing this in Vegas in November. And I might give the same talk, because I think it's really crucial. It sounds so simple, but I think it's crucial to understand that mindset is almost, it's everything, at least when you get started. for example, these levels that I put in the book talk about different levels of author success as they relate to your platform, your online brand. And so this first level, it's basically just having a book, but it's not as simple as that. It's not just writing, okay, I've written a book and now I'm a level one author. It's actually this mindset shift. It's going from having a book, and you may not be making a lot of money, but you're making some money from it is coming in. Maybe it's $40 a month or whatever. But you start to see that this is a real viable thing. You start to feel that this is a real, avenue for income. And so that's this mindset shift that happens at level one. So let's say you already have a website built and it's got your, your book up there and a place to sign up for a mailing list. But really, until you make that mindset shift, there's a difference. It's not really a platform yet because you're not treating that writing as a business at this point.
So you're talking, yeah, it does. I think it does. I think you're talking about the sort of focus when you look at it and when you make decisions, making decisions that are commercially driving the point of you doing it rather than making decisions, which is, oh, I've got to have a website. This would be a nice picture on the website. You shouldn't be thinking this is a nice picture on the website. So what's the function of that picture there? What's it doing? 100%. So it's that little detail that feeds into every decision you make.
Absolutely. When I wrote my first book, originally it was called The Golden Crystal. I since have changed it and rewritten and launched it again. But it was for me. I mean, it was a gift from my father, I just wanted to see if I could do it. There was never any intention of making money from it. There was never any, I wasn't going to put it on the website other than just put it on a sidebar of a blog that I was running. There was no commercial intent behind any of that. When I did it, I wrote the book and it was bad, but it was good enough to give me other ideas for more books. And at that moment, when I had those other ideas pop into my mind and I wrote them down and took notes on those, it became kind of a commercial project at that point. It became something that I thought, well, I can't imagine ever going full time doing this, but I could probably make some money. And at that moment, that was when the mindset shift happened. And so I started approaching the next books more like a business. And what happened was that blog that I had, and it was just like a life hacking blog that everybody in their 20s builds at one point or another. It became more of what's my brand as an author and how do I have that reflected on the website? And so that's when the shift from a website to a platform began. And of course it wasn't finished, but that's about the time that mindset shift for me happened.
Yeah. I think one of the important things about this approach that you're talking about is that you also don't waste time doing stuff that, you've got to have a Twitter account. You've got to have a Twitter account. Why have you got to have a Twitter account? Why is there a viable commercial reason for having that? For some authors, there is, particularly in the nonfiction area. For others, it's a colossal colossal time sap that delivers nothing back. So again, bringing that decision-making process to it, which I think is what you're talking about here.
It is. And it's a great thing you brought that up too, because I treat, and this is all discussed in the book too, because originally the book was actually called Welcome Home, The Author's Guide to Building a Home Base. And I rewrote the whole thing and it's very different than it was, but that core concept of having a home base as an online platform is still there. And Twitter, Facebook, Amazon description, Goodreads page, whatever it is, those are not home bases because you don't ever own them. Like you own your own home. You're renting that space from them and they can change it or, the landlord can pull that at any time. Right. And so those are what I call outposts. And this mindset shift that happens, this going from a website to a platform that happens at some point during the level one phase of an author career, involves recognizing what do I want to have as an outpost as an author? And what do I want to, just ignore? And that's not always easy to do because we do see people have massive success with Instagram, whether they're using ads through, Mark's course or whether they're just posting pictures of books that they're reading and people are following them and buying their books, whatever it is. There's always a success story in our niche that we can copy. But it's not always wise to copy all of the success stories and all of the niches, right? And so choosing those outposts is important, but choosing which ones not to focus on is equally as important.
Yeah. And I think digging deep with people as well, finding out why it's so great to have these conversations on this, on the self-publishing show and it, in our conference and in our Facebook groups, because you can see somebody who's very prolific on a platform and you think, oh, they're so good at that. Why aren't I doing that? And then you speak to them in person. The first thing they say to you is, yeah, it makes me no money, but I enjoy doing it, which is a valid reason for doing it. But it's also good information for you.
It's very, yeah, absolutely. And, I've talked to some people at this conference. I was just at recently, Superstars here in town, with the same response that you've got. And I've also heard the response that, I'm making a killing. I'm doing really well. And I'm using this platform and I'm sort of the Instagram author.
Yeah.
And so what we do is we think as authors, that must be the thing that I'm missing. That must be it. And it's not as, it's not chasing the silver bullet or anything necessarily that drastic, but it is this idea that we're obviously our book is perfect. Yes. And obviously it's our baby and there's nothing we could do to improve our craft. And so what we're missing is clearly just some outpost somewhere, hidden social media network that all the successful authors are using. And so we go chase those things and we don't give it a fair trial, meaning we don't give it a fair chance to see if it actually could be a viable income stream for us or could take us to another level. We just treat it as, I put a couple tweets out and no one bought my book. And so Twitter doesn't work for authors.
Yeah.
Which isn't necessarily true. Right. So
yeah.
It's choosing what not to focus on is very, very crucial at this point in an author career.
That
level one, level two area.
I was going to ask you about the book. I will ask you about that, but I will also just follow that, also maybe conclude that little passage and say that this is actually not always easy to tell. You see lots of authors doing lots of different things. That's why it's great to follow Mark, by the way, because that's
absolutely
kind of his thing, is to say, this is what you should be doing, this is how I'm doing, this is how it works. But you do need to spend a bit of time, don't you, doing some research. Now, let's talk about the book, because you've referred to it a few times. Just tell us about it.
No, and I promise it wasn't a shameless sales pitch. It's fresh in my mind. I just finished this, put it out there. I'm working on actually the third book now. The second one is BookBub Mastery, and it's about getting featured deals, not BookBub advertising.
Sure.
And the third one I think will be about emails. But the point is, this first one is really the core foundation for author careers. It's treating your writing like a business and how to do that. And it's what are the different levels of author success? And the whole point of it, when I give this talk or presentation, the point of it is showing authors that no matter where you are in your author career, no matter how bad or good your book is, or you're assuming you're writing to the best of your ability, without needing to go down the rabbit hole of improving craft, that's always a good thing to do, mm-hmm. but without
that's
necessarily
a good, that's
needing
a good to, rabbit hole to go down.
It's a good rabbit hole to go down. My point with all of this was to say to these authors that there's something you can do right now using the tools and resources that you have with your books as they are, that can get you to the next level in your author career. So like I said, sure, improving craft is always a good thing. Working on character development in your books is always a good thing. But that probably isn't the thing that you're missing that's keeping you at a certain level in your author career. There's something you can do. And again, it's not a silver bullet. It's not finding this particular outpost and building, a Twitter. It's not that. It's treating it with a different mindset and kind of looking at how you can take your product, your brand, and expand horizontally as well, without needing more and more books or faster writing all the time. Anyway, that was the purpose of the book, was to just to tell people, hey, there's something you can do now that can probably get you to the next level in a certain amount of time.
Yeah. Well, you can shamelessly plug the book. That's fine. Tell us the title and where to find it.
It's called Platform Mastery, and it's an indie author guide. That's sort of the little series that I've got going on. But I'm just basically copying Chris Fox and the other guys that are doing their really, really good work with having kind of a series. It's not necessarily a series is what I mean. It's you can read each book by itself. And hey, if I need help with BookBub, I'll go pick up the second one. But because I like Chris Fox and I wanted to steal everything he's ever done because he's amazing, I just made it a series.
Yeah. So we talked a lot about the website and I like that analogy. It's home plate or what should we say? There isn't really an equivalent.
Home base.
Yeah, home base.
Yeah.
Home base. What's home plate? That's the place at home base, isn't it?
It's home base, yeah. Is that cricket? Is that home plate? Is that what you call it?
No, we don't actually. I don't know where I got that. I thought home plate was a baseball expression, and I love baseball.
Well, it is. I mean, yeah, the plate is what the base. It's another word for base.
But right? Home base is the sure. Okay, so I like that analogy. That your website remains to this day, and people always talk about the death of websites or the death of emails or the stuff that's been around for a few years, but they're not going anywhere, right. And they're still crucial parts of what we do. And the outliers, the outposts, as you called them. the other bases, I guess.
Yeah.
can you give us a sort of a generalized guide as to what those other crucial bits would be, and what are less important for you?
Sure, I can tell you the ones that are crucial for me.
Sure.
Again, like I said, I've kind of used the example of Twitter and Instagram. Those are potential outposts. Those are things that, and the way I'm defining that all right is the home base is what you own. That's your space, right? That's your fortress that you're defending, and you control that and you own that. It's your property. Outposts are anything else. If you don't own it, even if you're investing heavily into building it out, which could be a viable thing to do, you still don't own that. Therefore, it's never going to be your home base. So that's just getting the definitions out of the way. For me, obviously, I believe everyone's home base is their website. That's their author platform, right? That's what we talked about earlier. And then for me personally, as an author, I use Facebook as like I have an author page that I lean heavily on to promote books and you know, reader engagement, things like that. Facebook, I find very good for that sort of thing. Some people use Goodreads. Some people use Twitter, which I've tried and failed at over the years. So that's not one of the outposts that I focus on. I have a Twitter account, but I don't do anything with it.
No, I mean, I do not hear success stories from Twitter either on the ads platform.
I typically don't.
Or organically. I see people who enjoy being on there and they have a bit of a personality around them. Sure. And I think maybe it gets to a point where that can work for you. But I think for the vast majority of us, it's somewhere where you get your politics and the weather.
Well, and you kind of answered that too, right? If we're writing fiction, Twitter is typically not going to be as useful a tool for us, typically. Now, I hesitate to say never, because there's always going to be one fiction author that's like, oh, I make money on Twitter. And that probably is absolutely true. But for the vast majority of us, you're right. It's not going to work. Now, if we're writing political nonfiction or we're doing business things in 140 characters or whatever they allow us now, is a good way to spread your message and get people on board with what you believe. Twitter could be an absolutely wonderful platform to generate some organic readership, or I should say outpost, even though it's a platform. I'm using it, you know, a different term for that.
Yeah. And I suppose the other thing we need to do is, as you make the point there, so if you're writing nonfiction, maybe you're doing, you know, political commentaries or whatever, Twitter could be the perfect place for you. It might work well for you. If you're doing YA, Instagram might be an important platform for you. Absolutely. If you're doing stuff that skews older, you know, like Cold War thriller sort of things, I write, Instagram maybe is going to be less useful. And that's an important part also of understanding how the wider platform operates in making those good decisions.
Absolutely. And it really does, at some point, it comes down to what you as the author enjoy using.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're going to make anything successful, any outpost or platform, and you don't enjoy doing it, you're going to be working, you know, fighting an uphill battle. You're really pushing against the stream.
Yeah. And that is a difficult area, I think. And this is a real J. Penn sort of philosophy, is that you've got to be enjoying stuff. Otherwise, it's not going to be sustainable for you. Why the hell should you be doing stuff if it's a slog? But I also talk to people for whom they're frightened of the technology involved in simple things on Facebook and Amazon ads and so on. And yet I can see their books have an audience if they put some effort into finding it. So there's a balance. I always think there's a balance here. You know, you can't avoid the fact we need to do some work. And sometimes you don't enjoy your work. Sometimes, you know, you just have to get through it. But you do have to, I think, find those important things. So a Facebook page to have a Facebook ads platform. Now, you might decide in the long run that Facebook ads aren't as profitable for you, or not profitable for you, and you want to focus elsewhere. But you do need to get to that stage of making that good decision. And so, yes, I hear what you're saying about do stuff that you enjoy. But at the same time, make good decisions about where you're going to put your effort in. You'll enjoy it if it starts making you money, right?
Well, there's that too, you know, absolutely. And I think it does come down to some common sense as well. Starting out when we don't know any better, there's no problem with going and building accounts at every social media network site on the planet. But to actually take your core work time that could otherwise be better spent elsewhere and focus on these things that just historically haven't paid dividends for authors seems to be a waste of time. And in order to know what those things are, it requires research and being in the community and the network and just paying attention. You know, as an author, if I was just getting started today, I would go start reading forums, K-boards, or listen to your show, like that kind of stuff. It's a great, you know, trial by fire, from the fire hose, if you will. So much information, but you start to hear the same things repeated. Oh, BookFunnel is a great service to use, or have a website and you need an email list. Those things are going to be repeated in every space within the indie author community. And so it would be very unwise to not follow that advice. But you don't know what that advice is until you start to pay attention to those bastions of information and knowledge, like this show and Mark's courses and any other popular podcast that's out there right now.
Yeah, it's funny how there's a few sort of essentials, isn't there, that have emerged. I mean, there's lots of stuff you can do. Goodreads is a bit debate about that, but there's, I would say, BookFunnel, Vellum, Facebook ads, Amazon ads, and your platform. Mm-hmm. There's five essentials. I can't see anybody making serious progress and not at least, even if, like I say, they've decided one of those is not for them, like Facebook ads, I'm not going to do that, I'm going to do Amazon. You still got to get to that point to find that out. There's essentials.
Exactly. I probably spent $60,000 total on Facebook ads. And as a platform, it works really well for me, for my author career, to build an email list.
Yep.
To give away freebies. It doesn't work as well as Amazon ads to sell books in the particular genre that I'm in. But I'm not allowed to say that unless I've invested the money and the time and the effort into, I went through Mark's course. I followed all the instructions. I did everything he said to do. And it's not that it didn't work. It just didn't work as well as the Amazon platform did for me.
Yeah.
And that I always test that. And I go back every few months and I do some Facebook ads and let's try it now. Let's see what's changed.
Yeah.
But you're exactly right. You have to get to the point where you know what works best for your particular career and where you are and whatever level I'm on. If I say I'm a level 6 author, by the time I try to get to level 8, maybe Facebook ads are much more important for me. And then they start to work again, you know?
Yeah. It's strange how many conversations you have with people who say Facebook ads drive my business as an author, and others who say, nah, I've given up because they didn't really work for me. And it's actually quite difficult to pick up. I mean, I talk to people about their genres, and I know some big urban fantasy authors for whom Facebook ads are absolutely crucial. And yet other people in fantasy only run Amazon ads now. Anyway, there you go. So sorry, you do have to explore that. You have to understand it yourself. So to circle back to the sort of core discussion about the website before we wrap up, Nick. So how often should we be refreshing and sort of checking the relevancy of our platform?
You know, my answer to this has changed over the years. I used to, you know, again, I was the blogger. I was the guy who was saying update all the time and kind of the Joe Pin approach, you know, and maintaining sort of this constantly updated, constantly fresh database of content. As a fiction author only, I don't think that's as important these days. You know, I think Google, which means every search engine, but the one that we all really use, has certainly said and come out and proven that, you know, fresh content is better than old stale content. But what that means, I think, has changed over time. I don't think it's necessary as fiction authors to focus so much on maintaining a blog and keeping readers up to date through that sort of medium. I think it's important to make sure our latest releases are there, you know, our covers of books, if we want to do sort of a book reveal, an online platform is a perfect way to do that, to host that sort of thing. I have an online store, for example, and I get into this in the book with some later levels, if you will, like selling products related to your series and that kind of stuff. That's really great to have on your website. And that's a way of keeping everything fresh. But I put all my updates in email format and send them to my readers through email. So that's sort of the way that I keep my content being sent out, meaning like, what I'm doing, personal updates, books I'm working on. None of that stuff really lives on my website. It all goes directly to email. So in a sense, my website is a much more static, you know, not changing platform. And again, I'm not saying that it's just, here's my website and it's never going to be changed. I'm just saying that it's not crucial these days, in my opinion, to worry about blogging and making sure that we've got an article going up every week or every day. And again, this goes back to Joanna Penn, you know, unless you're the expert, you know, you're doing the nonfiction side as well.
Yeah.
You're helping authors and doing that sort of thing. If you've got that side of it, then yeah, it's going to be, much more beneficial for you to write content and keep things up to date and make sure you're relevant in search terms and all that. But most people are searching for books on Amazon or they're coming across them in their Facebook feed because of ads. They're just not finding fiction to read by searching in Google.
No.
Fiction to read that's like this author, and you know.
So is it a good way to think of your website as a place where some new readers will find their way and they'll go through it to get onto your free book or your first book or whatever, and then it's not really a place where you're serving an audience who are coming back all the time. It's a place for that initial, but in which case it kind of stays fresh, doesn't it? Because if it's new people it's serving all the time, it doesn't need to be changed every
That's
two
exactly
weeks.
The way to look at it. Yeah, it's fresh because the people who are seeing it are usually seeing it for the first or second time only. In all of my books, the call to action at the beginning and end is sign up for my mailing list. And that link sends them to my website where they can sign up and all that and then click around. But the whole purpose of that platform for me is to drive people to sign up to my newsletter.
Yeah.
And again, I'm speaking as a fiction author only. Now, my nonfiction stuff, that's a whole different ballgame. That's different strategies, different things are involved, and keeping content on there is an important strategy for me. But for the fiction side, you're exactly right. It's people are hitting that website probably once and only once or twice. And then if in they sign up to my mailing list, then I can now market to them through that. If I have a reason to go to the website, they want to get a new, I made a drinking mug, you know, that with my characters, the slogan or whatever on there.
I have mine.
That's all that, there you go. Exactly. That lives on the website. So people go to the website to buy those things, but they're not hanging out there. They're not engaging with each other and communicating with one another or me. It's all sort of a one-way communication mechanism. Yeah.
Look, great, Nick. Thank you very much. The keenly observant would have noticed that we're not wearing the same clothes we were wearing at the beginning of this interview.
I thought I had the same stuff.
Oh, is it the same one? Oh, maybe I've given it away, but I have a feeling I've got a different t-shirt on. So in the middle of our call, conversation, I got a call to pick up my daughter from school because she developed a cough and, alarms go off and she's back home. She's fine at the moment, but we're in quarantine. So that's why we recorded this over two legs. And I appreciate your patience and effort with that, Nick. It's great. And I've got to wish you luck because you've got this move to Hawaii, I guess, hanging in the balance a little bit at the moment. But it will happen at some point. It will happen at some point.
That's what we hope.
And we'll come and see you because I want to visit some of those observatories that have up on the volcanoes.
Yes, you've got the Mauna Kea. Yep, the one up there on the mountains. Come check it out.
Awesome. Superb. Nick, thank you so much indeed for coming onto the show.
Thanks for having me, James.
This is The Self-Publishing Show. There's never been a better time to be a writer.
There you go. There's Nick and talking about author platforms. Your website's a couple of years old now, Mark. Time to refresh it.
No, it costs a lot of money and it still does its job quite well. So no, I'm not actually looking at that. I'm going to be building onto it. So just actually commissioned the designers to add a store onto the page where I'll be offering signed copies. Well, so, you know, people sign in or they, you know, ask what they want, tell me what they want. They give me the dedication, they pay for it through WooCommerce, and then it spits out an email to me. But more importantly, I'm going to be hiring, a full-time PA, probably in the next week or two, and then that'll be one of her jobs is to kind of collect the book, bag it up, and send it to wherever in the world the reader wants it to go. So, yeah, that's going to be a new project that we're working on the next couple of weeks.
She's not going to sign it for you.
No, I'll sign all the books. There'll be like dedication as well. So, that would be fraudulent. So, no, I certainly won't do that. But we'll see. I don't think it's going to be a moneymaker, even if. You know, the add-on is quite expensive, in the thousands, which I could probably get it done cheaper, but I'm too lazy to shop around. It's just kind of a nice thing to have. So, you know, perhaps over time it will pay itself back.
Are your hardbacks, the deal that you did, that you've spoken about in the past, have gone live? They've started appearing in the supermarkets. I mean, I'm avoiding supermarkets still at the moment, but I'm sure they're in there. We've seen a couple of photographs of them. But I did notice, I think maybe in Aldi, which is a slightly cheap and cheerful supermarket in the UK, being sold at £5. I mean,
they're not in Aldi.
Asda. Asda, okay, Asda. £5. You know, that must be not far off what they cost to produce.
I shouldn't think so. Yeah, that's the price in the supermarket. So Tesco, Sainsbury's and Asda are all in that kind of £5 to £6 mark. And that's deliberate. We're not really aiming to make any money on the hardback sale. It's really just to get volume so that we can hopefully hit the Sunday Times bestseller list. I have no idea whether that's possible or not. Numbers, and you don't have to sell a ton usually, although since lockdown has finished, the sales appear to have been a bit higher than they would normally be. So it may be a bit more competitive. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, I'm fairly relaxed about it all. I drove down to the Salisbury Tesco's on Saturday. There's a big queue and it was raining and I was completely underdressed for it. So I was freezing my ass off for half an hour to get in. And of course, when I got there, it wasn't there. So I was like, oh, that's annoying. So then I drove to Andover, which is about half an hour away. I went to the Andover Asda, wasn't there. When I went to the Andover Sainsbury's, it wasn't there. Salisbury Sainsbury's, it wasn't there. So I'm like, this is a bit annoying. But then my mum found it in the Asda in Lowestoft. So she sent me a copy. And then since then, I've had a few readers and actually a few SPF people have spotted it in their local stores and have been kind enough to take pictures and send them to me. So it's in some stores, not all stores. So yeah, we'll see. I can't really influence it hugely. So it's one of those things I'm just going to sit back and see what happens, I think.
Yeah. Good. Well, it must be fun to see your book on the shelf in the supermarket. And good luck with that race to the Sun. I'll buy the Sunday Times on Sunday.
Yeah, it'll probably be in there. But I think
actually, I've got a subscription,
it runs Sunday to Sunday, so I think this week it wouldn't be in because it's basically Sunday to Saturday. I don't know, it's a bit weird, but I spoke to the publisher about it. There is lots of weird timing issues and just kind of historical hang-ups as to when they calculate the list. Because in the States, it's Tuesday to Tuesday.
Right.
So Sunday to Sunday for us. So we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. Good luck. And obviously the visibility you get, and you'll be ka-chinging away on the ebooks and print on demand as a result of that, hopefully. Good. Okay. Thank you very much indeed, Mark. I want to say thank you to Nick Thacker. Thank you to Catherine for churning out those Patreons in record time. And that's it. We are on the back end of a very, very busy period. And I'm really hoping to have at least a couple of weeks before you kick my ass about all the things that are going on in the future, which is already like a mountain in front of us. Can I have a couple of weeks off, boss?
I have a couple of days.
Days. Tough man. Got to get the end of month accounts done for then. Good. Thank you very much indeed for joining us. We will see you next week. All that it leaves me to say is that it's a goodbye from him.
And a goodbye from me. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Get show notes, the podcast archive, and free resources to boost your writing career at selfpublishingshow.com. Join our thriving Facebook group at selfpublishingshow.com/Facebook. Support the show at patreon.com/selfpublishingshow. And join us next week for more help and inspiration so that you can make your mark as a successful indie author. Publishing is changing, so get your words into the world and join the revolution with the Self-Publishing Show.